And good morning and welcome to a Red River Radio Spotlight. I'm Bill Beckett, the program director for Red River Radio. Coming up this weekend, September 21st and 22nd at Northwestern State University, it's the 10th annual Louisiana Studies Conference with the theme this year of Once Upon a Time in Louisiana, a presentation of creative and scholarly works. And joining me today in our Noel Foundation studios are Shane Rasmussen, director of the Louisiana Folklife Center and also an associate professor of English at Northwestern State University in Natchitoches. And he is joined by Robert Bennett, an independent scholar and author, and they're going to share the details with us. Shane and Robert, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So let's get started with Once Upon a Time in Louisiana. Now, I'm presuming that somewhere in this, we're not going to find the children of Hamelin here in Louisiana. So this is not that kind of a fairy tale. Tell us what this is all about.
Well, you know, especially, well, I was interested, although at NSU, I do teach a course on folk and fairy tales.
Okay.
What I was really interested in is the kind of stories that Louisianans tell, because we're a storytelling people. We always have been. We always will be. And, you know, there's an anthropologist, Clifford Geertz, who has written just wonderful things about storytelling. And he said, ultimately, these stories are the tales that we tell to ourselves about ourselves because we want to see ourselves in a certain way, mm-hmm. and they give us a sense of identity. And the story grounds that identity in a way that we can picture it and illustrate it.
Right.
So what he's talking about is, in a sense, think about all the kinds of things that people in the Louisiana, and there's so many different groups that we have here, but we're all Louisianans. And we tell our stories about each other and to each other. Historically, we have historical tales. We have we have tales that are rooted in legend and myth and rumor, and we have stories that are obviously wild and fantastical. But you know, they probably have a poetic or a symbolic truth, or at least a cultural truth, and so we continue to tell them. And of course, we have our political mythology as well, and Louisianans love to talk about that, and that's in a sense, I mean, the kingfish, and how many stories revolve around.
Yeah.
I mean, so many, right? And people love to tell those stories because it was a trickster figure, you know, who couldn't be, ever be pinned down. He's never just one thing; always moving around.
Matter of fact, they've made two movies on it.
and that's the wait till the third, right?
Right, yeah, yeah.
So Louisianans are a storytelling people who, in a sense, they want to give a sense of who they are in a way that other people can understand, but especially they're telling these stories to themselves.
Right.
And so we've invited historians, we've invited anthropologists and folklorists and of course the poets and the fiction writers, and they're coming to Northwestern State University on Friday and Saturday, and they're going to share with us their visions of these stories.
Okay, so now we have a whole bunch of different panel discussions going on all weekend long.
You bet.
And so let's start with Friday. You've got three of those. This is Friday evening, so it's going to be a shorter night since that's a work day and you know people got to get off work or make it down there.
Right.
Now, Louisiana in Children's Literature, Once Was Louisiana, which I'm interested in, and Louisiana Language, Nature, and Healing. Can you give us kind of a brief overview of these?
You bet. Well, you know, we have at NSU, Dr. Amy Martinez-Garcia is going to talk about folk remedies in Sabine Parish and the kinds of remedies that came from all across, whether or not they were using the plants or whether or not a little bit of, for example, we know that there's traiteurs all throughout Louisiana, especially South Louisiana, and they would have this sort of syncretic, you know, kind of vernacular mixed with the Catholicism. Background and you know, never officially, you know, canonized by the church, never officially recognized, but also tolerated, and people know that these things work because they do, or at least they believe they do, and that's enough. And then, of course, we also have a couple. There's really a good one about the Cajun Almanac, how the people of the residents of the German coast harvested nature and basically the vernacular kinds of traditions that people were tapping into to get by, because you have a culture that, you know, during a lot of these times in the, you know, back in the 18th, 19th centuries, the doctor could be pretty far away. And what do do? You make do with what you have. And so rather than getting by in a kind of institutionalized medical, you know, foundation, they would run with the things that had worked in the past and that often was folklore. But they didn't think of it as folklore. They just thought of it as what works.
And a lot of times it was really the roots of what would become modern medicine, you know.
Exactly.
I watch old movies. I watched a John Wayne movie not too long ago, and they used tincture of arnica. Well, if you look up arnica, the plant is actually a, you know, it reduces inflammation, and it actually has been used in medicine now. So, yeah. You know, they were boiling up, you know, or brewing up in their homes what later would become, you know, laboratory scientific material.
Right, right. Well, I mean, you know, grandmother's chicken soup, mm-hmm. we know works.
Yeah.
And a lot of these things, you know, in the Once Was Louisiana obsession, Sean Beasley is going to talk about mythic Louisiana, the legend of the Rougarou, you know, the kind of was is it a wolf? Is it a wolf man? It's hard to kind of know. It's a little bit of a hybrid figure. And if it gets sicked on you, you know, maybe it's because you were breaking some of the things that you'd said that you would keep during Lent. Or maybe it had some other darker, you know, because if we can't explain it, it becomes even more, in a sense, right. menacing, right?
Yeah.
And so she's going to talk about that. But also, we've got Jody Brown has a really cool one. She talks about basically a walking tour proposal that she'd like to set up. She's done a lot of things on tourism in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
And so she sees this as an opportunity to, in a sense, look at the kinds of religious sites that a person could go to in Louisiana, throughout New Orleans, and to get a sight of how people celebrate. So, in other words, if you go on tour, or if you go to New Orleans, it's not carnival season, you think you're missing out, but no, because all you got to do is be guided around, because every place has some kind of significance, right?
I thought it was always carnival season in New Orleans.
In a way, it might be if you go to the right place.
Right, exactly.
You know, the places that, you know, I don't take my children when we go down there.
And there you go. Now, it's interesting because Dr. Cheryl White does a haunted Shreveport tour up here.
Kind really?
Of a semi. Yes, yes. She'll take you down to some of the famous haunts, and she does a program for us called The Shadow Files, so about, you know, myth and mythology and what facts are behind it, and then
right.
what is embellished and just not true or not provable. So, well, let's go on to Saturday sessions. I see Voices from the Margin, Tell Me a Story, Building Louisiana, and the keynote address. We'll get to the keynote in a minute, but let's look at the first three that day and tell me a little bit about those.
You bet. Well, again, we have a little bit of working with the French Louisiana Trade Tours, a session, a talk on that. But also, here's a really cool one. Bernard Gallagher is a fellow from USUA, and he is doing something on motorcycle clubs and their festivals. And it's really cool because, you know, there are so many people that attend to these, far more than the actual bikers.
Right.
And so he's going, well, what's going on then? This is a festival for bikers, but the crowd is over 50% non-bikers. So what's really going on here? And is it a tourism event, or is it the people themselves saying this is who we are, or is it kind of both? And he's trying to figure out, and it's kind of an interesting festival because it's over 21 only.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most festivals in Louisiana are pretty open to everyone.
Right. Family kind of
right.
events, yeah.
And this was kind of a private kind of, you know, celebration. So he's going out and investigating that, which is really cool. They've also got something neat with they've got a session all about, it's a telling me a story, a reading of narrative descriptive poems set in Louisiana. He has some really great poets in Louisiana. You know, Catherine Savage Brosman, John Doucette, David Middleton. These people know what they're doing. And they're going to be reading basically how the landscape and the cultural landscape meets, in a sense, in history, and how all that weaves into a kind of collective and individual identity at the same time. And this, you're going to love it. And then finally, with it, talking about built Louisiana, we're talking about archaeology. We're talking about, here's the paper I want to see. It's about the furniture built by the free men of color at Antebellum New Orleans.
Oh, okay.
Basically, that these people have been overlooked.
Right.
You know, people, you know, that they're not looking enough at the furniture built by these folks that, in a sense, were kind of in this hybrid, a middle place, a liminal place. These were free men of color during a time when most of them were enslaved.
Right.
And they were making this furniture that was very highly regarded and sought after, and people paid good prices for it. So what's going on there?
Yeah.
I want to hear about that.
It's the craftsman, you know, the craftsmanship. Right. But it's like Amish furniture up in the northeast of the country, you know.
Right.
Very highly sought after, wonderful furniture. So now on into Saturday afternoon, we've got Ebb and Flow and Louisiana Literary Lenses and Spanish and Cato Culture. So now the Caddo culture, definitely interested because we're very much in Caddo territory up here.
Yeah. Right.
Having Caddo Lake and Caddo Parish, you know, kind of makes sense. So tell me a little bit about these.
Well, you know, we've got a couple of them actually on the Isleños. You know, the folks way down there, down south, mm-hmm. you know, and they're, you know, these scholars, there's three of them, they're going to talk, and they have collected the decima from them, from these old tale tellers, some okay. of which were really old, like 102 at the time they were collecting this stuff. And these are these Spanish tales, and Spanish songs, I should say, that they would sing, and they are dynamite, and they're trying to figure out what are these about and how they reflect the identity of this island people, these people that are way down south and really, in a sense, you know, comprise their own folk community down there.
Right.
There's also one on the Red Bones. Which is, you know, a mixture of folks that are in Louisiana and trying to figure out how did they see themselves as a people rather than how other people described them.
Right.
So, and that's kind of important because how do you take control of your own story?
Mm-hmm.
Pete Gregory is going to talk about that, how the people basically up in this region here are, the young people especially, are taking charge of their own storytelling rather than having the anthropologists tell them what their stories are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always really cool because they're talking back to power. They're talking back to the institutional voices and saying, hey, this is who we are.
Right. Now, on into later in the day, we have Once Upon a Time in Louisiana. And here's one. Remapping Louisiana's cradle-to-prison pipeline to a cradle-to-college pipeline, an early childhood educational service learning project. What is this about?
You know, when I think about that, I think about the tremendous, the horrible kinds of numbers demographically that we see with young African American men going to prison. And our prison population here in Louisiana is way, it's
one of the highest in the nation, if
is.
Not in the world for, you know, a particular state compared
right.
to countries.
It's frighteningly high.
Right.
And so how do we pull people out of that? What happens to our outreach that we can help people and, in a sense, embrace everyone in our communities to make sure that they all have opportunities to escape this kind of, the word pipeline alone is frightening to
right.
think about. And so they're talking about literacy. They're talking about the kinds of counseling and the kinds of ways that they can reach out to folks to expand their senses of who they are. In other words, their opportunities,
mm-hmm.
that you have more opportunities than you might at first see. And so it becomes something where along the lines of education becomes a huge part of that.
Right. So, okay, so now we're going to get to the keynote addresses. Both of these look fascinating. One is on the career and life of Clementine Hunter. Clementine Hunter. Tell us about this. And this professor is actually from up here.
Yeah. Well, Tom Whitehead, he is a... done something amazing, which is that, you know, he met Clementine when she was very young.
Mm-hmm.
And when he was very young.
Right.
And she got to know him and he her very, very well. He bought some of her paintings sometimes as soon as they would be done. She would complete it and he said, I want to buy that right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's amazing because, you know, in a sense, there was no middleman.
Right.
You know, he just got to have, he had those conversations with her. He knew her so well. This is also about the kinds of people that knew her. It's sidebars of the career of Clementine Hunter, talking about all the people that were on Melrose that knew her and helped her along in her career. And yet, he mentions that, you know, in a sense, her artistic vision remained the same.
Mm-hmm.
She was not overly influenced by them in that sense. They helped promote her. They helped get her work out there, whether it was Joan Rivers or filmmakers and things like that, Lyle Saxon. But she retained a sense of self that was true to herself throughout her career
right.
and didn't let this fame or this promotion, in a sense, kind of sidetrack her from what she kind of saw as her artistic mission and vision. The other one is Katie Bickham.
Right.
She is works at Bossier Parish Community College, mm-hmm. and she's done two just fantastic poetry books, The Belmar and Mouths Open to Name Her. And in these poems, she speaks from the position of persona, in other words, a narrative speaker that's not herself often.
Right.
Writing from the senses of people that basically would have lived during these times, often in the 19th century, and giving them a voice as they talk about those things that are hard to talk about.
Right.
You know, in hers, speaking to the unspoken place, you know, she's talking a lot about how, in a sense, we today, in everywhere we move around, whether we're going to Walmart or we're going to the bank or going to our place of work or our place of worship, these were sometimes on the sites where there was slavery going on.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we reconcile that knowledge and that history with the fact that we're on, in a sense, the same ground? How do we make sense of this history that's, in a sense, very difficult to talk about? And so she wants to give a name to that by talking about, she's done exhaustive research of like ledgers, diaries, primary documents. And so she wants to talk about, she says, what it meant to live in the time of blooming plantation slave labor, and then do help us to talk about basically the work of remembrance. What can we do to foster healing we have so long stifled to lift for another day? And I'm quoting her here because she can say it a lot better than I can.
Right. So, and now, Robert, we get to your presentation. You've been here patiently. Yours is on a very important topic, and that is the best source for stories and really the best source for histories. You know, factual histories. Can you tell us about your presentation?
Sure. Well, I'm from Natchitoches originally and lived there off and on my entire life. As a matter of fact, on both sides of my family, we've been in the Natchitoches area since there was a Natchitoches area. I'm a direct descendant of St. Denis, and the original settlers on the other side of my family came over in the 1700s.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout my entire life, I've heard about or seen things that have carried over in my writing. For instance, the first book I ever wrote was called The Bottle Tree. And I wrote that. My wife, who's here in the studio with us, Karen, has really encouraged me to put down some of the things I'd told her that I'd learned since the time I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the first book I wrote was The Bottle Tree. And I carry the title around with me since I was probably 4 or 5 years old, and I used to drive out to, or ride along with, of course, to my great-grandmother and great-grandfather's house in Kasachi Forest, and one of our relatives had a bottle tree in his front yard, and it always fascinated me. Now, a bottle tree is, people from Louisiana are familiar with them. They're just a tree that has bottles tied all over it. And I heard all kinds of stories about why it was there, and I did some research and then wrote my own story about why there's bottle trees. That kind of prompted me to keep looking and digging deeper. And everything I write has some portion of either a family history or a genealogy link to it, something I've heard, something I've seen. And Shane has been gracious enough to invite me to the conference and then to the Folklife Festival every year for quite a while now to learn even more. Because every year at the Folklife Festival, have people come up to me and tell me, well, we had a bottle tree and this is what happened. And so I get to carry on not only my own family's histories, but also other families' histories as well.
Now, is it a specific item of folklore that, you know, you put the bottle tree out to do this? Or is it individual, in, you know, to particular families?
It's really, it was in general. The bottle trees were just an old tree you had in your yard.
Right.
And you tied all kinds of bottles to them. You can still find them. They may have plastic jugs on them that are 40 mm-hmm. years old. They may have glass snuff bottles or old whiskey bottles. And they were supposed to catch spirits.
Okay.
And they would keep the bad spirits stayed in the bottles. And they would protect the people. Now, a particular color bottle kept the good spirits and allowed them to wait there for their chance to move on to the next world,
right,
to a better world. So it's tradition throughout the South. It's just much more heavily influenced in Louisiana or more seen in Louisiana.
Well, now, as somebody from the North, that explains something that I see here in Shreveport. Outside the Philadelphia Center, they have a bottle tree.
Yes.
So it's very interesting. Now I understand the significance of that.
Yeah, and I've been really happy to notice that a number of bottle trees now are starting to spring up around Natchitoches since my book came out. Mm-hmm. It used to be when I was a kid, you saw them everywhere.
Right.
And then they kind of slacked off and you weren't seeing them as much. They didn't fit in with the decor. But now that people are going back and doing their homes a little more old-fashioned and mm-hmm. you know, the yards and garden are a little more old-fashioned, you're seeing the bottle trees pop back up, which I'm just extremely excited about.
Fascinating. So, all right, let's tell folks how to find out information about this event so they can plan out their visitation.
Well, you know, it's the Louisiana Folklife Center website is phone number is 318-357-4332. That's 318-357-4332. Or if you put Louisiana Folklife Center into any browser, you're going to hit our webpage, and the full program is there. Just click on that link, and you can download the program. So, and as well, we're right on the NSU campus. Right. This is a free public event. We just want you to join us. If you're listening to us, come on down and join us and have a good time.
Anybody with a taste for history or culture, yeah, or that just wants to learn more about the ground that they live on, this is a good place to do it.
The only hard part about this conference we have coming up is being able to choose what to go to.
Right, yeah, because there's simultaneous programs, so sometimes it's hard.
Shane does a phenomenal job of booking in so many different people that right. You literally are running from one to the mm-hmm. next, trying to get a piece here and a piece there.
Right. So, all right. Any final thoughts that you'd like to share?
If you're in Louisiana, you're listening to us, Red River Radio is the place, and come on down to Natchitoches for the Louisiana Studies Conference this Friday, Saturday. You don't have to RSVP. It's absolutely free, and just have a good time. Learn all about Louisiana and share the love for what we have.
All right.
And I look forward to seeing you there.
All right. Shane and Robert, I want to thank you very much for joining me today. That was Shane Rasmussen, director of the Louisiana Folklife Center and an associate professor of English at Northwestern State University in Natchitoches, along with Robert Bennett, an independent scholar and author. And they joined me in our Knoll Foundation studios today to talk about the 10th Annual Louisiana Studies Conference, which will take place this weekend, September 21st and 22nd, at Northwestern State University. If you'd like more information about the conference, you can visit online Louisiana Folklife Center at louisianafolklife.nsula.edu, or you can call the center at 318-357-4332. That's 318-357-4332. This has been a Red River Radio Spotlight, and for Red River Radio, I'm Bill Becker.